Hello, everybody, and welcome to Minute 18 of Season 7 of Movie Our Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Nick Rehak of the Rabbit Hole Podcast Network. Welcome back to the show, Nick.
Thank you very much for having me back.
So, Minute 18 begins with Lambert giving the okay and ends with John chuckling while Cobb is just getting angrier. We ended yesterday with the fact that, they just found out that he's on the phone and they all pick up, random extensions in which, now that I think about it, they're in Cobb's office. Mm-hmm. Why would Cobb have so many phones in his office? If they were in the bullpen, I can understand why they would have a lot of phones.
Yeah, that is a whole lot of phones, isn't it?
They have again, 4 or 5 people on different phones in the same office.
I think that's just a testament, though. I think that just goes to show that guy has that excitable energy. They're just knocking out really quick what you need to know. We're keeping it lean, and that's what people are focused on. They're not focused on the seemingly increasing amount of impossibilities there.
Exactly. It's just, yesterday we talked a little bit about the fact that they should use a speakerphone, but, I don't know. This is even crazier. It's not like this is the Oval Office where they have a bunch of extensions in the same room. Okay, fine. I can understand that. But, just in the inspector, the chief of the major crimes unit having 4 or 5 extensions in his office. Interesting. Okay. But bottom line is that everyone picked up the phone and we ended it with them getting ready to start the trace. And then Lambert, gives a thumbs up that everything's okay. And then Cobb acknowledges that and then talks on the phone and goes, Simon. And then Simon, we hear on the phone, Simon says, he wore the board, walked the street, and survived. Where are my pigeons now? Pigeons? I had 2 pigeons, bright and gay, fly for me the other day. Why was it they did go? You cannot tell. You do not know. And then Cobb goes, you mean McLean? Who else could he have meant?
Yeah.
Now, what's very interesting here is that so this is a real poem. I couldn't find the origin of where the poem first was released or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But the idea here of the poem, what I was able to find about it, it's the idea of fidelity and love.
Interesting.
Because pigeons are monogamous and they then are devoted parents because they care for their children. And, so the idea here is these 2 pigeons that are bright and gay fly for me the other day. Why did they leave me? If there's so much love and affection and whatever, why are they gone? Hmm. So it's somewhat appropriate in this sense here, for Simon to be asking that type of question.
Yeah, in a weird, sing-songy, his own creepy way kind of thing.
Of course. But I'm saying it's not a random nursery rhyme. It is connected to what's going on. And, I mean, if you look at it from the perspective that this is real and not scripted, it's pretty amazing that he would think to use that on the spot. Not that he had planned to ask that question. That type of thing.
It does seem rather planned out, doesn't it?
Yeah, of course. Well, it's planned out from the script perspective, but it's not necessarily planned out from reality.
Well, that's what I'm saying. From within the film world, it feels almost too apropos.
Well, it seems very apropos, but again, how does he know that his pigeons are not there? I don't think he planned and said, I'm going to call and I'm going to say, okay, I'm going to ask where my pigeons are. I don't know.
That's true. I get what you're saying. Yeah.
Right. And I mean, I love the response that Simon gives when he says, you mean McLean? He goes, no, I mean Santa Claus. it's a nice quip, and again, this is summer. The last 2 movies, in the series took place at Christmas time. This is in the summer. I mean, we don't know exactly when in the summer this takes place because there were some discrepancies as to when it takes place. We talked about it the last few weeks. You know, that there was a sign that said that there's a school sale, you know, but this is not August. This seems more like something is happening at the end of the year because, you know, there are kids that are still in school also.
So that seems about right. Yeah, and I would think so because when he gets to Yankee Stadium later on in the film, there's people there working and getting the ball diamond ready, and we're in the throes of baseball season right now, into March, into April. So schools tend to wrap up in June. So I would say it's like late spring, very early summer.
I would agree with that. And again, it can't be even early summer. It has to be – June is the latest it can be if these kids are all still in school.
That's true. That's true.
You know, it's not as if all these kids are in summer school or something like that. You know, it's just
that would be a lot of kids in summer school.
Yes, that it would. I agree with you on that, which is why I don't think that it's plausible that, you know, that, you know, just doesn't make any sense. And then John, you know, responds because he is on the phone and he goes, yeah, I'm here. Ah, there after all. And your friend. And then at this point, they send Ricky into the other room and he goes, there's Carver, come on. We need you in the other room. Let's go. Come on. And then that's dressing his wounds at the time. And she goes, she says to him, they need you, go. And then, you know, they do this pretty quickly. And then John says, yeah, he's here too. And may I speak with him? So he puts him on the phone and he goes, well, is the Ebony Samaritan there now? And it's very interesting that Simon already knows that Zeus has picked up the phone. Like, how does he know that?
He had to have felt like maybe his hand grabbed the receiver and heard like the plasticky noise of it, or maybe the cord is making a noise that's causing it to bang on the phone. It just because of how those things were designed back then, it just had to have been a noise thing, like a truly tactile thing.
Okay. And that's a good answer. I don't think I would have thought of that from that perspective. And immediately Zeus goes, you got a problem? He goes, no. My only problem is that I went to some trouble preparing that game for McLean. You interfered with a well-laid plan. So how much trouble do you think you went into? I mean, he just had to say, you know, go there and walk around, you know, wearing a sign. It's not as if he, you know, later on, there's some of the other tasks that he gives him where he really does have to do a lot more planning ahead of time. But this is not one of them.
Yeah.
You know, what did he have to do?
What I don't understand is just that. Where was his plan going? We all know that his – well, not we all know. We eventually know that his goal is to get to the Reserve Bank and that he wants to get the cops as far away from there as possible so they can be undisturbed. And that's fine and all, but how do you go from wearing a sign such as he wore in Harlem – and all of a sudden, like to that point, like what's the goal? What is the expected plan or action or task there? And I thought about it. I've been thinking about it, and I can't think of a single thing that would do that. I don't know. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And it's not like he would know that or expect Sam Jackson's character to jump into things. He was completely unplanned, and he even mentions that one or two times. You know, throughout the film, but I just don't understand what his grand plan would be. Everything else seems so well thought out and planned and has backups to it just in case, you know, they do get a I can't remember the word that he would say, but if they fail to meet the task and then a bomb goes off. Everything else seems so well planned except for that point, as if he wanted him to get caught and picked up or moved elsewhere and then start it. So I don't know. Maybe it was just a humiliation thing, or to see him get beaten, pummeled up. I don't know.
Yeah, but he could have gotten killed. That's the whole thing. You know, he could. Like, I agree with you. I think he just wanted him to be humiliated and maybe beaten up. But, you know, how could he know that there was going to be a gang standing there playing basketball or chess or whatever they're doing. You know, there are certain things that he couldn't have banked on.
The only thing I could think of, and I'm just kind of going on a limb and stretching a little bit, would be is if he has him wearing something like that in Harlem and all of a sudden, like, a huge fight breaks out or he gets killed or a riot breaks out, if there's just mass hysteria and all of a sudden all the forces have to get shifted, then he has his space to do his thing. That's the only other thing I can think of.
Right. Okay. I mean, it could be. It's just, again, it's a little strange. I mean, in the script, one of the things they mentioned is that there's somebody who was sitting there watching John when he was there. You know, that's the one thing that they mentioned, and in the movie we don't see that.
Interesting.
You know, we know that Simon basically mentions the fact that, I mean, as he says now, that he set this all up. So he knew that John was taken out of there. Hmm. You know, how he was taken out of there, you know, by the fact that he got into, you know, an Uber, a 1995 Uber or whatever it is something completely different. But, you know, because also he said he only has to be there, was it 10 minutes? Mm-hmm. I think that's what he said. We'll be back in 10 minutes. Or maybe 15 minutes. I don't remember what they said at the time. And he says, that's all right. I'll be dead in four or whatever it is. You know, he knew that he wasn't going to be having much of a chance in that particular spot. So I don't know. Don't know. So it's a little strange, the plan here. I mean, again, later on, even Targo says to Simon, you know, stop playing around with him and just kill him already. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Short answer, yes.
Right. So I don't know. Not really sure. And I mean, Carver gives a great response where he goes, yeah, well, you can stick your well laid plan up your well laid ass. And Simon just hangs up. You know, that's it. He's had enough. I don't need, I don't need anything more than that from you.
And it's so great. It's just such a Sam Jackson thing to sit down, just be cool, Mr. Cool, and just perfectly deliver a line like that. It's just, it's classic Sam Jackson, and I'm here for it all day.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on that. I think it's great the way that they do that. So it made me think also about the fact that, you know, that we find out that Zeus's name is Carver, right? So are you familiar with, other people named Carver?
George Washington Carver.
Okay, that is one.
And that's presently the only one that jumps into mind. I'm sure if I hear other names or think of them, they pop up. But George Washington Carver is always the first one to pop into my head.
Right. Okay. I mean, it is a word that it's a name that comes from England after the Norman conquest. And it derives originally from the Gaulish word carum, which means either wagon or cart.
Not what I thought it
was. And I mean, and I found tons of people that have this name. But as you said, there aren't that many that really stand out as people that so you do have, George Washington Carver, who was a botanist and an inventor. It's funny, they're actually listed on this list that I have here. There are two other George Carvers, but they're not George Washington Carvers. And they have to mention the different, like one of them is an academic and the other one is a cricketer.
Okay.
There's an English cricketer named George Carver who only lived to the age of, what was it, 33. I don't really have the information as to what happened to him or whatever. John Carver was one of the pilgrims on the Mayflower, and he was the first governor of Plymouth Colony. He lived from 1576 to 1621. You have the chief of general staff of England. His name was Michael Carver, who was also, he became a baron. He was known as that. You have Raymond Carver, who is a short story writer and poet. There is Steve Carver, who was a director, producer, and photographer. And then there's a lot of fictional characters named Carver, obviously. So in the movie Tomorrow Never Dies, James Bond movie. Mm-hmm. So Elliot Carver is the villain.
Okay.
Newspaper magnate. All right. In Your Town, you know, from the TV show The Wire, you have a police officer named Ellis Carver.
That's right. That's right.
Okay. Do you watch Stranger Things?
I do watch Stranger Things, yeah.
So one of the bad guys' name is Carver, Jason Carver.
OK. Okay. And it's just everywhere. It's one of those things where you don't really think about that name until you really sit down and think about that name. Like there's I completely am blanking until just now. There's a art school here in Maryland that's Carver.
That's right. I there are a whole bunch of schools that are named Carver also. There's the Carver Center for Arts and Technology. That's probably what you're thinking of.
Yep.
In Towson, Maryland.
Yep. Yep.
There you go.
I went to a prom there one military. Time. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, wow. Wait, as a teen?
Yes, not recently.
Or you went as a chaperone?
When I was
high. No, I know that. No, my point was. That wasn't what I was asking. I was asking from the perspective, you know, did you go as a chaperone or did you go as a kid there? That was it. I wasn't going anywhere even close to that.
A friend from middle school, she ended up going to that high school, and then I went with her, and it was a lot of fun. It was a really good time.
Right. Okay. That's fair. Then you have Carver Elementary School, Carver Academy, Carver Middle School, Carver Military Academy in Chicago. You have a junior college known as Carver Junior College in Cocoa, Florida. And then you have a Bible college in Atlanta, Georgia, known as Carver College.
It's everywhere.
So, yeah, that's right. Carver's all over the place. There's even a hotel in Pasadena called the Hotel Carver, It was the first African American owned hotel in the town of Pasadena. Yeah, there's always interesting stuff to find here.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then he asks if he has any problems with ebony. So, do you know what ebony is?
I don't want to say mineral. It's like an ore.
It's a type of wood.
What?
It's a hardwood.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Like I always thought it was some kind of like ore or like a stone kind of thing.
Nope.
Huh. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, something that's it's part of the wood that's like polished, stuff like that. You know, so it's like an ornamental wood type of thing. And it is apparently one of the most expensive woods in the world.
I believe it because it's not like – I mean, I could – if you asked me, Nick, where do you think there's a large collection of ebony trees? I wouldn't even know where to begin to tell you. I have zero idea because that's not something you even hear most days anyway.
That's true. That's true. I mean, the different places that's mentioned here where you find it is Ceylon, Gabon, Queensland, New Guinea, Timor, Mauritius. I think that's how it's pronounced.
Sure. I'll take your word for it.
And yeah. But the Dutch colonists in some of those places, chopped up a lot of it and took it, they took advantage of it, I guess you could say.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, I mean, it's something that's been even in ancient Egyptian tombs, they find pieces of ebony and stuff like that. So it's something that goes back really, really far.
Oh, okay. All right.
Basically, the type of things that are made out of ebony these days, you have crucifix, you have clarinets, oboes, piccolos. Sometimes you'll have pianos. That are made from this type of wood, violins, guitars, cellos, these type of things. So it's sometimes you have black chess pieces that will be made from ebony.
Or like on a piano, ebony ivory.
That's right. Mm-hmm. But are the keys made of wood or not real? I don't know.
Now I'm curious. I would assume most of them are. Or I don't think they're really like using actual ivory unless it's like a truly decorative and ornamental piano, not really supposed to be played. But yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, interesting. Okay. Right. And then after Simon hangs up the phone, so Cobb gets really upset and goes, "That was not," and then he gets cut off. So we'll have to wait until tomorrow to find out what it is that he is not. He's not something. I don't know. we'll just have to wait and see.
It's another cliffhanger.
There you go. That's the way these things work. we like cliffhangers at these stages, don't we?
Absolutely.
All right. So the script. So it starts off with Kyle picking up the phone and saying, Simon. And Simon goes, I'm hurt, really. I'm not very happy. He wore the board and stood on the corner. Congratulations. Marvelous. Where are my pigeons? I had two pigeons, bright and gay. They flew from me the other day. What was the reason they had to go? You cannot tell, for you do not know. You mean McLean? No, I mean Santa Claus. Cobb, McLean, and Lambert exchange looks. He's here. What about the dark one? He's in the other. Get him. Cobb motions to Lambert. Lambert goes to the door and leans out, motioning frantically to Walsh and Zeus. Meanwhile, Simon continues. About the trace you're putting on this call. It will take 10 minutes and 5 more for our car to get here, which happens to be a public payphone. So why don't we put the idea to Betty by? Walsh and Zeus enter the office. All present? Zeus looks at the phone, looks at everybody else. Who's that? Hello. I took great trouble to prepare this game for Mr. McLean. And look what you did to my well-laid plans. That the Bloomingdale guy? As far as I'm concerned, you can stick your well-laid plans up your well-laid click. Zeus, furious. So I like it better in the movie what they did in that with that scene. I think they, mm-hmm. you know, they added in some nice stuff, even though there are similarities between it. But, you know. All right. So every Wednesday, we have a segment called Jesus Hump Day, where my guests will give their top five, Samuel L. Jackson performances. So why don't you start with your number five and work your way up, Nick?
My number five is Tom Cutler. That was a role he cleaner. It's a brand movie. I crossed some time, watched it, and I enjoyed it way more than I thought I would. So I'm popping that on there. Number four is Nick Fury in all of the Marvel films, except for the TV show that just came out. I'm just going to stick to the films. It's a character that's just been building and building, and the more we learn about him, there's more mystery and intrigue behind it, and I think he's just handled that character really, really well. Number
three. Well, do you want to 1 second? Do you want to pick one of his performances as Nick Fury?
I could do that. Yeah.
I mean, I know you like the name. I'm aware of that.
It is beneficial. If I have to pick one, honestly, and I know he's not really in it a whole lot, you have to go with the first Iron Man. I mean, no one knew what was coming, and he comes in an after credit scene that no one was expecting. And that set up a whole new trend for cinema as is. But here he comes in, Sam Jackson, just cool as hell. And he just lays it out in front of him. He's like, this is what I want to do. And then off it goes. And it makes all of the subsequent films that much more intriguing. So whenever he pops up, there's an added level of, oh, what else is going on? Or, oh, how does this impact the world bigger? His feel has always been kind of important throughout.
Excellent. All right.
My number three would be this film where he plays Zeus. I think it's a great character through the whole run. Number two is Elijah Price from the film Unbreakable. I felt like that, and weirdly enough, you have him and Bruce Willis in this film together. So, you know, a couple years later, they get to reunite. My number one, which I'm sure a lot of people are going to have, is Jules from Pulp Fiction.
All right. That is a great list. Thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
All right. So, Nick, would you like to once again tell people where they can find Nick Fury?
Well, once again, they can find me at rabbitholepodcasts.com. There's a myriad of podcasts over there. I'm on two of them. That's Play MST for me and Lyrical Innuendo. And if you feel like it, I'm over on Instagram. I'm at ThatRehack. It's pictures of my cats, occasional dry erase boards with historical information about that particular day. And I made a goal for the rest of this year to watch a movie every Monday. So every Monday, I try to snag a picture of what I'm seeing, and you can join me on that journey.
All right. Very cool. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on my website, Movie Rob Minute. You can also send me an email to movierobminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow. Yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
Johnny comes marching home again, hurrah, hurrah! We'll give him a hearty welcome then, hurrah, hurrah! The men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies they will all turn man out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.